All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, September 8th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, DFSR.com/NFL. Still has you, you still have time to get a free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. That includes MLB as well, NBA when the time comes. It's all under one subscription package. So make sure you go over to DFSR.com/NFL to grab that free trial to our projection system. You will not be disappointed, buddy. NFL kicked off last night with a surprise, we would say, right? So -8, the Patriots go in, and they kind of get their doors blown off. I think it was something like the most points any team had put up against the Patriots in the Belichick era. I read something like that. I mean, is this like a sign of things to come? Is just this kind of like, we just don't know what we don't know heading into the NFL season, total fluke? Like, where do you kind of see this game falling?
It's hard to say for sure. I mean, I think that, for starters, Brady and a lot of the core on the Patriots are a year older, right? So that just does matter at some point. You know, Gronk might not be still the Gronk of old days. So the core continues to get a little bit older, and, you know, other teams are kind of on the rise. I don't know. Like, there's going to be a year where they don't go 13-3 and come out of the East as the one seed, right? So I don't know why this year couldn't be that year, although it's going to be, you don't want to be in a position of predicting it because you've been wrong every other year till now. So I couldn't say for sure.
Thanks for that definitive answer. So the other thing,
that's an honest answer, Doug. Sorry, I could be the Patriots, I'm really worried on the old worry meter, 1 to 10. I am a 6.5, Doug, which is pretty high this early in the season. So is that bad?
Weird. My worry meter was 8. The Chiefs, we get a little clarity about their situation. They're clearly going to probably ride Kareem Hunt here, at least for the beginning of the season. He looked pretty damn good. Mike Gillisley into the end zone 3 times. He's going to just probably be their goal line back. I still think we're going to see some upside from him. I think, you know, it's always going to be interesting to see like how people correct and how the industry corrects on some of these projections, because I mean, no one had Kareem Hunt with that kind of game last night, mostly because they didn't see the Chiefs running downhill to kind of end the game. Tyreek Hill,
you did, Doug. You told me that Kareem Hunt untradeable on your keeper fantasy league team right now. When I asked, I said, hey buddy, you gonna try and move him for some extra value? You said, absolutely not, maybe Gillisley. I said, oh, okay, so there's no offer that could go on the table, and you were pretty adamant. So congratulations on that preseason pickup, dude.
Yeah, I inherited the stupid Dynasty League team that was awful going in, and it had Gillisley. And
not anymore, buddy. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
You're crushing some poor sap week 1 who's going to really hate his life. So,
all right, we're gonna go game by game here. Take a look at some of the fantasy implications that we get from each of these matchups. Our previous podcast, we outlined some of our cash game plays that we see going into the main slate week 1. So if you want to go back and listen to that, that'll outline. We go into more depth. We pick about 3 or 4 guys per position and go into depth on them. If we talked about them last podcast, I'll mention them here, and then we'll kind of move off of them because I don't want to be too redundant for those that have already listened. And there's plenty of games to talk about here, so no shortage of material. The first game, we're going to start with the 1 o'clock games. The first game we have going here is the Eagles and Washington. Eagles get Alshon Jeffrey in the offseason. Washington loses Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, replaces them essentially with Terrell Pryor, and Jamison Crowder is going to slot in there on the other side of the ball. Where do you see some of the value coming out of this game? We did talk about Carson Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey on the Eagles side as cash game values. Wentz specifically on DraftKings. We talked about those guys last time. On the Washington side, do you see, you know, where do you see guys like Pryor fitting into this offense now? Do you think it's an upgrade for him? Is he like pushing up against cash game play even?
Yeah, Pryor. I mean, you've loved Pryor for a while here leading into the preseason. I think I view him as a little bit more speculative than you do. Obviously, he's a big talent guy. He showed flashes of brilliance in Cleveland last year. Theoretically, has a better quarterback in Cousins here, although we don't know how he'll hold up to a new scheme, you know, just new relationship with a new QB. I think the reason I'm not as bullish on Pryor as you are is specifically for that reason. I think a lot of times you see wide receivers with lots of talent. Like, I think almost every wide receiver in the NFL has lots of talent, is my general opinion. And a lot of it comes down to, first of all, if your quarterback elects to throw you the ball. And second of all, if your coaching staff puts you in a position to use your talents to the best of its ability, whether it's good route running or good blocking, you know, like that your quarterback has enough time. So there's enough factors there where I'm personally not going to go after like what I believe to be a relatively obvious punt too. Like, I don't even think you're going to get big time separation, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him just shake out as a $8,000 plus wide receiver. And if you think that that's where it's headed, then yeah, he is a good value.
Yeah, no, you can. It's always hard to trust talk coming out of training camp, and you really can't really believe preseason stuff. I do think they brought him in here with the explicit idea that he was going to be their wide receiver one. He showed enough stuff in, like, he had terrible quarterback play last year in Cleveland, probably some of the worst in all of football, and he was still pretty productive when it was all said and done. Cousins is nothing more than an enormous upgrade, or nothing less than an enormous upgrade at quarterback. I do think, yeah, I'm very bullish on Pryor. I probably will end up playing him in some cash games, at least on FanDuel, where the price is pretty reasonable. Maybe on DraftKings as well for PPR, because I do think, you know, it's always can be a little weird speculating on players like this early in the season. I think that, you know, we talked about this on a previous podcast as well, but he kind of checks the boxes for things that I'm looking for when it comes to, like, am I okay with the speculation, right? Like, has shown talent. Gets a clear quarterback upgrade, and just like the coaching said, they do seem incentivized to want to get him the ball. The rest of this team, though, at least for the Washington side, I'm not sure I love. I mean, I don't love the running game in Rob Kelly. Jamison Crowder has shown flashes before where they will kind of target him, but not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Jamison Crowder's going to have to prove it to me, because he's been a hot play times in the past, but I'm not going to pencil him in as like the heir to Pierre Garçon's 200 target seasons or whatever. Like, I just think he's probably just a guy with an upside of being a little bit more than that.
Yeah, the Redskins did vacate a ton of targets when they lost Garçon and Jackson, and these are the two guys that are going to be on the field with Pryor being the wide receiver one. That's just it's a lot of targets to inherit, and it's kind of cliche, but to say they have to go somewhere, I do believe is the case for some teams, and I do think though that at least Pryor is the one that's going to see the lion's share of the looks there. Like I said, on the Philly side, we talked Wentz, we talked Jeffrey, and we did talk Zach Ertz as well as a DraftKings chalk. I think he's going to be the chalk tight end on DraftKings. That he's on pretty much the top of everyone's list in terms of tight end value there, so I don't think you're really going to get any separation on him. Anyone else on the Eagles side, you know, their running game, they get LeGarrette Blount there now. He's taking over for the, I mean, they had mostly a running back by committee last season. Do you see him as solidifying himself into a role where he's getting enough carries to warrant kind of fantasy consideration, or can you just kind of see them just going like a two or three headed monster like they did last season with Sproles, et cetera, and then you really can't get running back value?
Yeah, again, for the beginning of the season, there's absolutely no reason to speculate on situations like this for cash games. For big tournaments, there is. Like, if you're the one that figures out that they're actually going to use Blount the same way New England did, which is he gets all the touches inside the 5-yard line, and he's going to get, you know, 18 to 20 carries per game. And yeah, if you're a week early on that, that's actually exactly how you win big tournaments in football. But for me, even at the $6,200 price tag, given the presence of all the other guys that Philly could possibly give the ball to, given that it seems like at the absolute maximum, Blunt's going to be a 2-down back, and probably Sproles is going to be like a 1.5-down back. I just don't see the reason to speculate. You know, like a big tournament's yes, any other format, no thanks.
Yeah, no, I don't think he has the upside. I don't think either of them really have the upside, considering we just have pretty much a full slate of games.
Literally a full slate of games.
Right. You're just going to have too much of your production eaten into by and we've seen it before with this team, right? They've wanted to kind of spread the love a little bit, at least on the ground. That probably makes sense over the course of a season anyway, if you plan on going anywhere. So no, the Eagles side, we mentioned the guys in the last podcast we were interested in, and I think that's kind of where it stops for me. The next game on the slate, we have Jacksonville and Houston. This is a game I do not plan on watching, if it's at all possible. It seems like just the exact kind of wrong football game when there's so many other games. Yeah, but just like this, I mean, the over-under is 40, which is the lowest in the slate. It's Houston by 5.5. Jacksonville, you know, struggled in the preseason to decide if they wanted Blake Bortles to be their quarterback or not. They ultimately decided to just kind of stick with that sinking ship. The Houston side, they're -5.5 favorites. Anyone on that side of the ball, they're going to start Tom Savage. He's coming pretty cheap on DraftKings. Like, he's like in that Carson Wentz range. And he, you know, we got a couple games out of him last year, not a ton. Do you have any interest in any of these guys on the Houston side of the ball, considering they are something of a favorite against Jacksonville?
I mean, I guess Lamar Miller you can make a case for if you think that he's going to return to, you know, mid-20s sort of carries for him. That was what we were hoping for him last year when he came in, because Houston had a precedent of kind of picking a guy and just kind of running him out there into the ground, Arian Foster or any of Arian Foster's backups when Arian Foster got run into the ground. All of those guys would get a lot of carries, but for Miller, it didn't totally pan out that way. He's coming in at 7,300. He kind of reminds me of like the type of running back we would have played in DFS 3 years ago. Like the guy who's like, you know, low 7,000s, relatively good value, good matchup with Jacksonville. But the bar is just higher now. Like you can just get Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson at running back. And they're just so consistent and so good that, again, for cash game, this is going to be a theme that we probably throw out there throughout the day. But for cash game purposes, I just don't totally get it. Now, on the other hand, there are guys that I think do have some interesting upside in this game. Like DeAndre Hopkins comes to mind. Now, Hopkins was the mid-8,000s wide receiver in the past. Granted, he's got Tom Savage throwing him the ball here, so, you know, we're not exactly dancing in the streets. But at 7,100, you're talking about a guy who easily has, like, true wide receiver one upside. And that's not usually something you get at that price point. So if you do spend up at running back and you want to go a little cheaper, I could see Hopkins as a pretty reasonable, if risky, option.
Yeah, definitely risky. And he clearly was a disappointment last season. Didn't get any kind of quarterback play out of Brock Osweiler. So while Savage isn't like any great shakes, he's at least not worse than Osweiler, which is damning with faint praise, I guess. But I agree with you that I think, you know, will Hopkins be in a winning tournament lineup? It's unlikely, but there's really no one else in his price range that has the kind of upside that he's shown in the past. So if you think they return to just kind of just force feeding him the ball, like that double digit targets, and we've seen that from him in the past, right? We've seen the Texans want to just kind of feed him the ball because he's so far and away their best receiver. Will Fuller's hurt now too, so they got some pretty big wide receiver two issues, which actually could cause some problems with double teams, because like Jacksonville can load up on Hopkins here because you know, the rest of their wide receiver contingent is pretty slow. I can't even remember, they just signed somebody, or there was someone in the offseason that they had they were going to start on wide receiver two, as I scroll up just to see if I can get it before I finish the sentence, and I can't, but I'll get it one.
Hopkins still last season was a top eight target guy in the NFL. Like, he wasn't invisible. It's just the problem, the guy throwing the ball was so damn terrible that he had trouble actually catching it once it was thrown his way. It seems like anything should be an upgrade, and you know, you still love the yards per catch. He had 12.2, which was above average for that top 10 target group. Like, he's not a possession receiver. They're trying to make big plays with him, given that the running game is still speculative. I actually disagree. I think he is someone who could show up in top overall lineups, so I'm very into him here.
Bruce Ellington was the guy I was trying to think of. I knew it was like some guy, some other wide receiver that they had. Bruce Ellington and Braxton Miller are going to start there. The rest of their wide receiver core is pretty garbage. You know, the tight end thing, CJ Fedorowicz, we did see targets out of him in the past. It's mostly just a speculative tight end play, and tight end is pretty bad. I do think you end up seeing maybe the Houston defense being a pretty popular play today against Jacksonville. Whenever you're targeting defenses and special teams, we've talked about this in the past, but interceptions and fumble recoveries are pretty difficult things to predict on a week-to-week basis. Like, they tend to cluster, or they can have a lot of luck involved. So you can use them. I know some teams are definitely more prone to throw interceptions than others, i.e. Blake Bortles, but in general, you know, we try to target just teams that are facing other teams that are not implied to put up really any points, and that is the case here with Jacksonville. Their total point implications here is the lowest on the slate. I do think you see Houston as somewhat of a popular play for the Jacksonville side. I mean, Houston's a pretty good D. Jacksonville's Jacksonville. I mean, they have Leonard Fournette, and I think they're going to want to ride him this season as their number one pick. But is there anyone here that interests you at all?
I mean, not really. Houston last year allowed the fewest yards of any team in the NFL. That doesn't bode well for a Jacksonville team that was already a bad offense. All these wide receivers, you know, Hearns, Robinson, these guys have all been speculative plays in the past. With big upside, you know, you can get Allen Hearns for 5,200. Like, he's had multiple touchdown games. And if we're just talking strictly on an upside basis, you can definitely consider him there. But nah, Jacksonville is a skip-over team. I don't see any real reason to make them a big include in games in any format.
This is one of the first seasons where hope hasn't sprung eternal for Allen Robinson. It's been like two years in a row where people have just been waiting for like this Allen Robinson kind of just enormous wide receiver one, like enter the upper echelon of guys. But his quarterback's just not good enough. And that over the long term, that really just hurts you, right? And so while I want to believe that he could be like a 9+ target guy a game, and if he had a good quarterback with any kind of accuracy, I think there'd be a ton of upside in him. But nah,
he is a 9+ target guy a game. Like, he had 151 targets last season. He gets a ton of targets. It's just that not all targets are created equally. If your team can't get in the red zone, if they don't pass in the red zone once they get there, it really limits your touchdown potential. And if your quarterback just really blows and you can't turn more than half of your, like he had 73 receptions on 151 targets. You can compare that with Jordy Nelson, the guy who had 152 targets, but had 97 receptions, right? Like of these guys in the top 10, Robinson has by far the fewest receptions of any target getter in the top 10. And he has the fewest receptions of anyone in the top 27 target getters this year. So, top 24, Tyrell Williams got there too. But it's a bad situation for the conversion ratio. But if it does come together, like again, huge upside guy and relatively cheap. So I don't think we should write him off altogether. It's just, it's just a tough spot.
And I suppose there's some chance here, I mean, over the course of the season too, where Leonard Fournette is a pretty massive upgrade in terms of their run game. So that could help them as a team, but that's not really a place, that's not a limb I would really want to go stand out on in week one. Oakland and Tennessee, Oakland goes into Tennessee. This game has the highest over under, I think of the week. Yeah, this is the tie with Green Bay. It looks, in terms of the Vegas line, this is what you would put it like into like your shootout category. So it's 51 over under with Tennessee minus 2.5. David Carr is back after suffering the injury at the end of last season. Oakland also brings in Marshawn Lynch, though it's a little unclear like what his complete role is going to be. I mean, he's the running back one, but it remains to be seen if he's going to see running back one ups, or excuse me, like any running back one kind of volume. Let's start with the Oakland side of the ball. Do you know, guys like Carr, Cooper, these guys always strike me as, we rarely play them in cash games just because, well, Cooper especially is pretty volatile when it comes to wide receiver, but tournament, they strike me as like just a consummate sort of tournament play. Do you see this as the situation we would want to be in them with against Tennessee?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can grab Carr and say Cooper, or Carr and Crabtree, and you can really save up a lot. Like that would be a great pairing if you wanted to play at least one of the big name running backs this week, and maybe even both. You know, like if you go Carr and Crabtree and just real cheap at your, like Allen Robinson and some cheap tight end, all of a sudden you can afford Johnson and Bell. And, you know, while it's always tough to say that, like, to recommend playing the two big name chalk guys at running back in particular, that's a less volatile position, but that would be one way that you could get those two big guys that are far and away the top in basically every person's projection system leading into week one. So yeah, absolutely great stack. They're a team on the rise. One of the better offenses in all of the NFL last season, top six in terms of overall yardage, but they're not priced in the same way the teams above them are, right? Like, you know, if you want to stack the quarterback and wide receiver one on New Orleans or Atlanta or New England or Dallas, the teams above them, then you're going to have a tough time. Washington was the other team, but we already talked about them, and they have a lot of turnover. So yeah, it's definitely a good way to get some pretty good money on the table.
Cooper was one of the more, like I had mentioned before, Cooper was one of the more volatile wide receivers in football. He had a pretty high coefficient of variation, meaning he just kind of deviated from his own mean more than some other guys in his price range. Crabtree, on the other hand, was amazingly consistent. So if you're looking at those two guys in terms of just like tournament versus GPP, Crabtree, the lower your CV, that more just means you're more consistent. That's, you're more of a cash game play. The higher you are means your top performances has tended to cluster, and Cooper was definitely in that range. Like he was in sort of like the Julio Jones range of, actually, no, excuse me, he was just the highest guy of the top 10 or 15 wide receivers last season. So he has big games in him. This is what happens when you're a downfield threat. Sometimes you get there, sometimes you don't. And the games where he gets there just about as good as anybody. It's just the problem is just on a week-to-week basis, it's not all that consistent. On the other side of the ball, Mariota, just like Carr coming back from injury, he suffered at the end of last season, or excuse me, like yeah, sometime around the end of the last season. He's back now with a full bill of health. They signed Eric Decker in the offseason. A lot of their running game remains the same. I've seen Mariota talked about in places as a cash game play, even on some sites this week. Do you see him in that mold? Like he's been spoken about when people talk about just like kind of safer plays. Does the pace of this game and what Mariota's shown in the past, like, does he strike you as the kind of guy you would be comfortable running out in cash games?
Yeah, the nice thing about Mariota is that he can be kind of that naked QB thanks to his legs. Like, you can just play him and not stack him with the other wide receivers that he goes with, and he can do stuff for you, right? I mean, 350 rushing yards last season, that number could continue to climb. Good touchdown interception ratio, about 3-1 last year. Generally pretty safe, and generally safer than his price tag sometimes lets on. And so for those reasons, I think you actually could consider him. I mean, again, we're really looking for savings in any direction we can take it when we're going to play the two top overall running backs probably for cash games, on maybe even on both sites. I think on DraftKings, where it's a little tougher to play the two top overall guys, maybe you don't need to consider Mariota quite as much. But on FanDuel, where each one of those dollars is going to count for you, yeah, I think he's an excellent guy to consider.
We have Mariota right now as the fifth overall fantasy quarterback on the main slate. So, you know, he's up there with the guys like Wilson and Rodgers and Cam and guys that we are holding up there pretty high. So if you're fifth overall and just overall raw points, I think I would say we're pretty high on him. It's going to be
the cheapest guy of that group, you know?
Yep. Yeah, and that's why, especially on DraftKings, is coming kind of close with him about getting him in the cash games, because this is the kind of week where, you know, let's say even like that $100 savings you get from going from him to Wilson or $200 from Rodgers to him, it makes a difference. Like every dollar in this week counts when you're talking about wanting to possibly roster those two expensive guys in Johnson and Bell. So whilst it can look like nothing, like $200 or $100, I mean, that could be the difference of just getting a defense in just a slightly better situation. So, and I think Mariota's in a great spot. Like, again, this game that's supposed to stay close, a game that's supposed to have a lot of points. I think the one question we have for Tennessee is, you know, where their targets are going to go. Their wide receiver, they brought in Decker, and he's, you know, shown flashes of stuff, especially with the Jets and some of his red zone targets. But Rishard Matthews.
I mean, we saw Rishard Matthews get some targets at the end of the season last year. You know, he closed out the season with 13, 9, and 10 target games. And that, you know, so if you, this is why you can't for football just average things out of the course of the whole season. Like, it's just not basketball, right? Most people don't look at football as granularly as our projection system does and as we do. So one of the most important things to keep in mind when we're trying to figure out guys' opportunity is, first of all, just snaps that they're on the field. And then targets do a reasonable proxy of this, but also the types of routes they run. And so when you see Matthews, like early in the season, getting two targets in a game against Houston, getting three targets 2 weeks later against Cleveland, four targets, like that's just not probably going to happen going forward unless Decker comes in and just takes all those targets away. I do think he's still kind of the downfield option here. And if that's the case, I think you can probably pencil him in for like 9 to 12 targets, especially given that Decker is relatively new in the offense, you know?
Well, if you're thinking that, then we're probably low on his targets right now. Like, we only have him at a little north of 6. And if that was the case, and we thought he was going to be the see some of the targets that, you know, you're saying that he saw at the end of the season, then he actually is coming into cash game consideration, especially.
He's already in cash games on DraftKings. So, like, we already have him there. So I don't know that we're too low on him. But yeah, I think he's definitely just a guy worth considering. I do think that you're taking something of a risk, but this is kind of the problem with early season NFL, right? Like, by next week, we're going to have 3 or 4 guys that are priced way too cheap, right? That will just like be known quantities. We'll be like, oh, holy cow, actually, Leonard Fournette is the truth. This guy should never be priced below 8,000, and we can still get him for 6,800, right? Like, there's going to be some guys who crop up, some guys who fall off. But the thing is, we only need to play, whatever, 8 or 9 guys per week on each site. But we do need to... So we don't care about the guys that fall off, but these little diamonds in the rough that free up all the expensive guys, those guys will come forth. But right now, we're going to have to take guys like Matthews, who are cheaper, kind of more known quantities, but might not have the upside of like a Kareem Hunt, who just inherits a running back situation and turns into a god, you know?
Yeah, and I think that that's one of these situations we're going to look at their week one and just know a lot more, at least about like what Tennessee's overall plan is on offense, or have a better idea, especially with snap count as well. Delanie Walker ended the season last year as, I believe, the fourth or fifth highest fantasy point scoring. No, he was the fifth highest fantasy point scoring tight end on the season. Was also better when Mariota was there. Do you see him as a tight end option this week?
Yeah, I think so. Tight end is like kissing your sister this week, so I think basically anyone can be in consideration here. I do think that Walker has shown big-time upside in the past. I think on FanDuel, it's tricky because, like, he's like the wrong price for me for what I want to pay for tight end. Like, I think I'd rather take, say, the security of Olsen, or just go down to, like, you know, maybe a guy with better opportunity, like Zach Ertz or something. I think Walker, yeah, he's kind of in a no man's land for me. I think he's got big upside. He can be a red zone target, but not a guy I'm looking to rely on early in the season.
Yeah, I probably tend to agree with you on where he ends up in terms of price. And then the running game for Tennessee, you know, we still had bigger games out of DeMarco Murray last year. Oakland, much better against the pass, much better against the run than they are the pass. This game, for DeMarco, I think the game probably ends up being like a game script thing for him. Like, if Tennessee can get this lead early, if they can put some points up on the board, I think that you see them lean on him a little bit more. But if we're in a complete kind of shootout territory and you can get in that way when you face Oakland, because they just have a pretty high powered offense, I'm not sure he's the kind of guy I want to roll out there. I also do get a little concerned just about them managing some of his carries with Derrick Henry there, who's also shown to be pretty effective, and that kind of limits, I think, some of the upside on Murray.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Murray, also a year older here, you know, just a lot of carries on that body. I think that you could see not only them limit because of Henry, but you could just begin to see breakdown, you know. And for all those reasons, again, just why am I doing that? Why, if I'm sitting there making my cash game lineup, why do I press plus next to Murray's name at 7,600? It just makes no sense. So I'm not going to do it.
Another game that it falls into my will not watch category is the Jets heading into Buffalo to take on the Bills. Bills are -9 right now with a 40 over under. So that's the old, there's not going to be any points going on the board, but at least there's really no one we want to watch, I guess, except for Shady. But do you see, I almost just want to completely skip the Jets. I take that back. There's a couple guys in the Jets we can talk about. But the Bills side of the ball, Tyrod Taylor got a clean bill of health, so he's going to be back here after the concussion. You know, we saw McCoy last season. McCoy is as much upside in terms of just yards per carry as anyone in the NFL, but they just haven't used him in the red zone at all. And I don't know if we see that change, the coaching change this year, and we see that like they are just more incentivized to use him down by the goal line. But the touchdowns or the lack thereof on McCoy, are they just a complete killer? I mean, that's the thing that I just kind of end up avoiding from. They just don't give him the ball when they're down and close.
Yeah, well, that's part of it for sure. You know, there is a little bit of a personnel change. Maybe that changes this year. McCoy has shown a tendency to be able to punch it in from outside the five. But yeah, I mean, the Jets also just were one of the best teams in terms of yards per attempt allowed last season. You know, they're, fourth overall in terms of yards per carry allowed. And that's real bad for McCoy. I just don't, you know, this is going to be just a recurring theme. We're going to say this for probably every guy, but I'm really going to pay $8,500 for LeSean McCoy against the Jets when I can pay $800 more and get Le'Veon Bell. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not even going to do it in big tournaments. I just don't even think. I think the game script is such that the upside isn't even there for McCoy, and I just have no idea why I'm considering anyone in this game, frankly.
The Jets were number one in DVOA against the rush that last year. Now, they did lose Sheldon Richardson, and that's a huge loss for them. He goes over to Seattle, and so the downgrade that they get there on the defensive line probably does matter. It probably doesn't take them from like first to worst, right? But it is a downgrade. So I do think you see something in the way of they allow probably some more on the ground this year than they did last year. But overall, between those two things combined, Vegas just doesn't see the game as being played at a pace enough that like you can really get huge upside on the running backs. Like pace matters a ton, which people tend to not sometimes realize, that when your opponent's pace is pretty damn slow, it just limits your ability to just get the ball more. And that looks to be like probably going to be the case for the Jets. They're just not an overwhelmingly fast team, mostly because they don't want to be because they stink, right?
What are they going to do, right? Right. They're going to be bombing the ball downfield. No, they're going to hand the ball off and hope the game ends. That's like the Jets' main strategy. And yeah, that's going to be bad for everyone on an already pretty anemic Bills offense, you know. I guess one guy that does have some upside here, or is worth keeping an eye on as you project out the rest of the season, would be Jordan Matthews, you know. We've seen him be a big time possession guy in Philly, moving over to Buffalo. Buffalo, you know, no Sammy Watkins. Just really, if you want to just hurt your own head, just open up a FanDuel lineup builder and click on this game and then sort by wide receivers and just look at some of the names. Do me a favor, because a little spoiler alert, Matthew's the highest guy at 6,300 on FanDuel. The next guy is Robbie Anderson at 5,200. So this is not exactly, the old days, Randy Moss versus Marvin Harrison. This is a complete mess. But all that being said, in the old someone's got to get the targets category, Matthew seems to be at least the best guy to consider from this game, maybe outside of Charles Clay. But yeah, I think he's a guy just to keep an eye on. I probably won't play him. No need to play him this week. But if he's a guy who gets like, say he gets like 14 targets and has like 8 receptions for 70 yards, even like a not super great game, a guy I would consider in better matchups as the season progresses.
Yeah, I'm just worried about the quarterback play too. Like Tyrod's just not really much of a thrower, and he's...
Neither are you, dude. Neither are you.
No, that's true. I'm a terrible thrower, but I'm also like not paid to throw. I'm paid to talk about the throwers. So losing Watkins, losing Robert Woods, none of these guys were huge target guys to begin with, replaced with Matthews and Zay Jones. Maybe you see Charles Clay. I mean, Clay actually had something in the line of, well, at least for tight ends, consistency last year. No great shakes. I just think this game just moves way too slowly to really consider what you probably need to pay on the Bills side. Jets side, there's something to be said for a guy like Bilal Powell, mostly because I was on the Fantasy Pros podcast yesterday, and the guy, one of the, Mike Tagliari was talking about, he sees Powell as sort of game script proof. And I tended to agree with him in terms of it looks like they're going to probably want to use him early downs to run the ball, but he's also a really good pass catcher. So even if they were down, he probably would still remain in the game. His price is cheap enough on DraftKings that I think you can take a stab at it. So he's 4,900 on DraftKings. And if you just think that he's going to be the kind of guy that will see enough volume in any kind of situation the game goes, and Forte is not going to cut too much into it, I think that it's close for me, and I still probably wouldn't do it. But do you see where he's coming from on that the Powell thing? I kind of see it. If he can catch enough balls with PPR stuff, then I think there is some upside on him.
Yeah, there's certainly upside, and maybe like, you know, DraftKings, you have a lot more lineup flexibility. You have the flex spot, and you know, there's more you can do. Just when I think of the guys that I'm excited about plugging in lineups going into week one, Powell doesn't come to mind. But yeah, the Bills defense, you know, they were pretty darn bad against the rush last year, and they also just don't, they're very unlikely to run away with the game. And so for that reason, I'm going to be interested in running games against them all season long, unless something dramatic changes. So sure. Yeah. From that perspective, I can see it.
You know, right now we have Powell at 10 carries and 5 targets, right? But that's mostly kind of splitting with Forte, and it could easily just not be the case. It could easily be that Forte, you know, barely plays or comes in like once every 4 series. If that's the case, then we're probably way low on Powell's production. And in that case, he actually probably would be a lock. I do think the 10 and 5 is the basement of what you're, excuse me, like it's probably the average of what you have him see. But I can definitely see a scenario where it's a lot more. And if it's a lot more, then I think would end up coming into cash games. You mentioned Robbie Anderson. I have people seeing his name kind of thrown around as like a GPP flyer. He's been a downfield threat. His conversion rate on targets is awful, mostly because he's either deep and gone or nothing. And so not the kind of guy that I really want to target in a cash game, because like I said, his conversion rate, something, I mean, I think it was even worse than Cooper. It was really, really bad conversions. And the Jets are just bad. I mean, this team is this wide receiver group, Anderson, Jermaine Kearse, Ardaire Stewart, it just gets worse from those losers. So
you got that right, buddy.
I do think you see the Bills as a pretty, or could be a popular play here, mostly because again, you're facing the equivalent of like a minor league football team here, all things considered, and their implied total is the lowest of the week. So Bills are kind of expensive. The sites have price adjusted for this matchup. I still think there's a case to be made to play them, just because the personnel in the Jets is pretty bad. Before we hit up some more of these games, just a reminder to go and check out NoHalftime.com, the No Halftime app. It's a great app for taking one-on-one contests. Nothing better than during week one, than one of your buddies at a party or at the bar or wherever you're watching the game challenge you to take some player that you hate. Let's say you love Aaron Rodgers this week. He likes Carson Palmer. You have a chance to settle that hash right there through the app. He takes Palmer. You take Rodgers. You put up one-on-one contests on No Halftime. It's a great companion app for football on Sunday. Use the promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50. So go check out the No Halftime app and tell them DFSR sent you. All right, we keep going with the 1 o'clock games. Atlanta goes to Chicago. Atlanta obviously coming with sort of that Super Bowl hangover, although you usually get the hangover when you win the Super Bowl. In this case, they lost in crushing defeat to the Patriots.
So what kind of hangover is that? Is that like one of those hangovers where like you don't wake up next to someone you don't recognize and it's like a pleasant surprise? You wake up and you're like, huh, I think I told my roommate I hate his guts and I may, where's my wallet? Like one of those hangovers.
I think I have alcohol poisoning. Like, I think I just, like, I almost died. And it wasn't like the fun kind of die. It was like, I just like, you know, fell down in a thing of snow and just like, just lay there and the cops kind of dragged me back to my house. It's that kind of hangover. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. People sometimes make a big deal about where this kind of leaves you as a team. It probably does mean something to some degree. It was a historic loss. And there's so few of these NFL games that, you know, these kind of things tend to stick with you more than any other sport, and then a game like that probably tends to stick with you just the most of all. That being said, they are -6.5 on the road going into Chicago. How are we viewing this at Falcons team? They were almost historically great on offense last year. Matt Ryan was the most consistent fantasy quarterback in terms of standard deviation last year on a game-to-game basis, better than Aaron Rodgers, but better than him. He was the best guy week to week. Do we see them as having the same kind of firepower? They did have some offensive coordinator turnover here. Do we see them having the same kind of firepower this year? Do you think last year was maybe a little bit of an outlier and they're due for some regression? How do you view the Falcons?
Yeah, I think the Falcons are great. I think that they'll continue to be good. You know, their key parts are, you know, kind of in their prime or entering their prime, or, you know, maybe on the very beginning of the tail end, but totally fine. Julio Jones, to me, it's more a question of if he's healthy, because if he's healthy, he's one of the top five or so wide receivers in the NFL, maybe even higher, depending on the season and the target share. You know, a couple seasons ago, we saw him be, you know, a consistent $9,000 wide receiver that we were thrilled to play. One thing that's worth noting, and this is just kind of a tangent, but I think there's a price inefficiency issue right now in daily fantasy sports, where people perceive the top overall wide receivers as, you know, kind of on par with the top overall running backs, but that was nowhere near the case last season. So last season, there were four running backs that were higher scoring than the highest scoring fantasy points per game wide receiver, and that was the two big ones that you know about, but also Ezekiel Elliott and even LeSean McCoy. And you can go down and you can look at guys like DeMarco Murray, who had 16.7 fantasy points per game, and that's 0.3 below Antonio Brown. This is FanDuel scoring, by the way. So whenever we're looking at a team that's very much fueled by wide receiver production, we want to be a little bit wary of that for DFS purposes, not for the quarterback, obviously, but when we're thinking about wide receivers, I think for this season, my guess is going to be we don't want to wind up in the expensive wide receiver category until those prices come back down to earth a little bit. So for Atlanta, yeah, I'm very excited about their overall offensive potential, but given how much of that is kind of wrapped up in spreading the ball around through the air and a running back by committee situation with Freeman and Coleman, I don't really know how big a deal it is for our DFS purposes.
No, I agree with you there. You know, there was a little bit of wonkiness just in terms. Were you looking at points per total points or points per game last year?
Fantasy points per game.
Okay, because I was also looking at fantasy just overall points, and there was way more running backs actually ahead of those guys in terms of the overall list, because they actually, like,
a lot of these guys didn't play full seasons.
That's right.
Either.
Yeah, that's why I just want to make sure we're on the same page about what we were looking at there. I agree with you, and I think that the volatility around them is such that, you know, if you're getting around the same volatility for around, or actually just a little bit more volatility for around the same points per game, then I think, yeah, we're going to want to spend up more at the running back position than anywhere else. You know, in terms of volatility too, Julio Jones, he was, like I mentioned before, he was crazy volatile. Like two or three just like amazing games, and then games where he just completely disappeared. You mentioned the injury. See, if he's fully healthy, then we're low on his projection, right? Like, we have him right now for little less than 10 targets per game. That could easily be way too low, right? And if that's too low, then we're going to kind of look silly maybe on the Julio Jones projection going into week one. Do you see him as, like, do we want to return him to like this like 11 target kind of guy? Which, if that's the case, like he's coming close to cash game consideration here against the Bears defense. It's just not very good. Atlanta is supposed to put up a lot of points.
See, I don't think he still is cash game consideration viable here. Last season, he only had 5 double-digit target games, which is, I think, lower than a lot of people might anticipate. The upside is truly there for sure, and probably there will be some people who talk themselves into it. But if you're going to take him apples to apples below Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, you know, just to get the $300 or $400 savings on FanDuel to play him against the Bears when Bell and Johnson have great matchups, I just can't help you. I just think that's just bad. It'd be hard for it to be good because he scored 50%, not 50%. Yeah, you'd have to increase his fantasy production by 50% points per game last season just to catch up, and that's just not good math to do that for him right now.
Devontae Freeman was something around the fourth or fifth highest scoring running back last season overall, yep, behind only Johnson, Bell, and DeMarco Murray. A lot of his was touchdown. It wasn't touchdown dependent, but he had the third most touchdowns of any running back in that kind of top 10. Do you see when you see a guy like that where not a lot of his fantasy production, but some of it, the part that boosted him into this group was clearly that he had a lot more touchdowns than some of these other guys. Do you think that like that is the kind of thing that we just that can easily just kind of not disappear, but reduce itself? But even if you saw like a 20% reduction in touchdowns, just because that can just happen on a year over year, just the way the games play out. Do you see him as kind of maybe falling a little bit as compared to what he was putting up last year?
Well, what you're not going to like about it is it'd be hard for it to go in the other direction, right? Given his just total workload, which is relatively low. You know, he had a 23 carry game last season, a 20 carry game. But before that, his highest total was 17 and then down to 15. Like, he's just not a workhorse back. It tends to be guys you know, in the 25 or so carries per game category, which are exceedingly rare. But that tends to be the number of carries per game you need to really hit 13 to 15 touchdowns reliably. I don't think that you can count on him for that. Yeah, he was the definitive goal line back last year. That really helped. It also helped that the Falcons put him in such a position to be at, just on the goal line so frequently. So if the Falcons take a little bit of a step back or team scheme for them differently given their successes for last year, if they're not a top two offense with 6,600 total yards, it just seems like there's a lot that could go wrong for me to want to roster a guy in what amounts to a running back by committee situation. You know, Freeman is the older of the two. He's probably the guy that they're less excited about in terms of the long-term potential and prospects. And so, yeah, taking all that together, I'm going to need to see it from Freeman before I put it into action for my cash games, particularly on these absurdly high prices.
The Bears are walking into the season with Mike Glennon as the quarterback. They lost their wide receiver one option in Cam Meredith before the season even started. This is a team just completely headed the wrong direction. They do have a clear-cut RB1 in Jordan Howard. Do you see him as being viable at all? We rarely want to roster running backs in situations where they are going as underdogs into the game. That can simply be death for a guy. He does factor his way into the passing game some though. So I don't know if that kind of boosts his floor a little bit. How do you see a guy like Jordan Howard or anybody else from the Bears here?
It just depends. I mean, if you think the Bears can hang, then Howard, I think, is a great high upside pivot from some of the big two guys. The Bears don't really have a lot of options, and you can bet if they get a lead, they're going to do their damnedest to hold on to it. They did expose him to a few games last season where he did have quite a large workload. Atlanta was one of the bottom five teams in the NFL in terms of yards per carry allowed. The issue is that very few teams found themselves in a position to run against Atlanta, and that's because Atlanta was so frequently ahead. Atlanta had the fifth fewest carries attempted on them all last season too. So if you think some of that yards per carry was tied up in, hey, surprise, it's 3rd and 10, but we don't care because we're going to lose anyway, here's an 8-yard run, then you know, you can probably give Atlanta a little bit more credit. All that being said, you know, Howard as an underdog, not cash game viable, I do think the upside is there. And for football, it's important, like the story is almost important. Like if you can talk yourself into a story, aka a game script, where Howard gets a lot of carries, then he becomes a good tournament option. And there absolutely is a scenario where the Bears get out to a lucky early lead and do their best to hold on. And in that case, he could be one of the better running backs this
week. You know, it's likely that, or there's a chance that you see one of these wide receivers emerge that Glennon can maybe pair himself up with, Kevin White. People have been consistently sort of bullish on him if he were to ever get a chance, but he's never really materialized. We've seen Kendall Wright as a target guy in the past before with Tennessee. You could see him emerge as getting some targets. I think these guys are all coming pretty cheap. If you think they're playing catch-up, I think there probably is some value in guys like White or Wright. It's tough to know exactly, and you really can't go completely overboard because, again, even if teams are playing from behind, if your quarterback's just not very good, it cannot matter, right? Like, you're going to get more chances for sure, but this is still Mike Glennon, Kevin White, and Kendall Wright we're talking about here. So while it can be easy to talk yourself into some of these cheap plays and the idea that the game script's going to go their direction and they're going to be playing catch-up, there's some caution to be had there because, again, these guys just aren't very good. And at some point, just rostering bad players, even in good situations, is not really where you want to go. Zach Miller also fits that bill. Has seen targets in the past coming very cheap on FanDuel. I can see, you know, playing him in cash games mostly because I just don't want to spend it all in the tight end position there. And so all this being said, this will be a team that we probably end up readjusting after week 1 when we see kind of where their scheme goes, and it's hard to just go completely overboard. Do you think we have like the right, I mean, we're kind of hedging on some of these, like we're low on team targets for Chicago right now, and sometimes we're low as compared to quarterback attempts when we're just don't want to go overboard on one guy. Do you think we're like, we're correct in that Chicago placement right now?
It's going to be tricky. Like, it's always just tough to know who the guy is going to be. I think one reasonable way to approach a situation like this is to say, you know, we anticipate Chicago will throw, say, 29 times, right? And then you can kind of run your simulator or your system. You don't have the option to do this unless you actually access the ones and zeros in the database the way we can. But say you run it once with Kevin White getting 11 targets. Then you run it once with Kendall Wright getting 11 targets, you know, and you can kind of build lineups that way. I think that's an interesting way to approach it. Again, you're just trying to build out that story for yourself. And then you can see like, okay, well, if Kendall Wright did get 12 targets, he'd be a slam dunk cash game play. He's a terrific possession receiver. And so, you know, if I find myself in a situation where I really just need a wide receiver for 5,200, that is a plausible scenario. You know, maybe that's actually more of a big tournament thing. We saw Kendall Wright being I think the highest overall target guy in a season when he was with Tennessee. Now, granted, that was several years ago and a couple injuries and all that kind of thing, but it's not like he's a nobody with no potential. So my general approach is for cash games, just kind of not play anybody, you know, let it all sort itself out. But for big tournaments, to kind of construct those narratives in my own mind and then put some lineups in here and there that might reflect that.
Arizona goes into Detroit as a slight favorite here. We talked a lot about David Johnson last time out. We talked about Larry Fitzgerald. That's cash game plays. Those are guys that will be pretty much staples, I think, in our cash game lineups, and for pretty obvious reasons. So we talked about them last time. You know, I've heard people talk about Carson Palmer in this situation as a possibly cash game viable. I'm not really seeing it. I mean, what are your thoughts on Palmer?
Yeah, I'll pass. I think that there's just better options. You know, football is funny because there's only generally one slate per week that really matters, and that's the main slate. Yeah, I mean, for any of these smaller slates, you can listen more carefully for your various considerations. Maybe Palmer works on a smaller slate or something, but given that it's all these games are at 1 o'clock, I don't really see it. And if you're going to put him up against guys like Rodgers, Mariota, I don't think I'm going to head in that direction. Also, just because he's got David Johnson on his team, and while David Johnson catches a lot of passes, he also runs the ball a lot, and particularly when they get down close. So, yeah, I don't know why that would be where I would want to land ultimately. And yeah, this game has a reasonably high over-under, but it's not like Arizona's an overwhelming favorite or anything. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like where I want to land
up. Detroit strikes me as the kind of team with some nice pieces, and I just don't know if I'm interested in playing any of them, right? Like, Stafford has shown some flashes. This isn't the matchup I really want to target him in. They have...
I think Golden Tate.
Yeah, Golden Tate. Golden Tate's shown that he can be a pretty high target guy. That Arizona secondary is pretty good, so I'm not sure why I'd really go there in this situation. And then the...
Well, but I think the way you talk yourself into it is if you think Peterson's going to be on Marvin Jones and you think this is going to be just one of those Golden Tate games. Like, there were a few games last season where Tate in this kind of price range just went out there and, you know, blew the doors off, right? Like 145-yard receiving game, 165-yard receiving game. He definitely has it in him to just absolutely blow up. He was in the overall billion-dollar winning lineups during those weeks. For DraftKings purposes, but also have a couple 3-point games, some 2-point games, 1-point
right.
game. Like, he can disappear on you pretty quick. So I think just a big tournament.
Yeah, he was actually, what we talked about this on a previous podcast leading into the season, but in terms of the billion-dollar lineups, he was in three of them. That was the most of any player. He was in three perfect billion-dollar lineups over the course of a season. Their running game, Amir Abdul, looks like he's going to be the first and down back, and then Theoretic's going to catch balls, and Zach Zenner's going to get in the goal line, and all this is to say no thanks on this running game because there's too many guys for too many different specific situations.
Just let him prove it to us, you know, no reason.
And I don't think, I mean, unless someone gets hurt, I think that's just where they're going to stick with anyway. And it's just going to all kind of trend toward the middle on the Detroit team. So I'm pretty bearish overall in terms of like how much I'm going to want to play Detroit coming into this week. Pittsburgh is a huge favorite over Cleveland as well. They should be. Cleveland is still garbage. We talked about Le'Veon Bell last time as being, you know, clearly, obviously it's Le'Veon Bell. I don't need to really go into that. We also talked about Antonio Brown and just what he can provide. Anyone else from the Steelers here? It looks like Big Ben's price has been corrected for the matchup. He gets pretty expensive. He doesn't strike me as the kind of quarterback you want to play at the very top of the price tier. There's some guys that are like that. Like, Aaron Rodgers kind of exists in that zone for me. I'm like, well, I don't mind playing him at the top because he just is that kind of performer. Does Roethlisberger strike you as the guy you overpay for in a good matchup, or is it just easier to pay down for some other guys?
Well, it's generally easier to pay down, but, you know, he does have a few of those incredibly huge games, you know, 5 touchdowns and 400 yards type of stuff, and he can go off. I mean, the thing that helps Ben here is that Bell catches so many balls out of the backfield that if you think that Bell just happens to score his touchdowns via receptions, or, you know, it just happens to be one of those weeks where Bell gets like 13 targets but only 17 carries, then maybe you talk yourself into it. I actually don't think Cleveland's a perfect matchup for that because I think it'll be a little bit too easy. Like, that tends to happen more in those shootout style games where handing the ball off doesn't make sense, but you still want the ball in the hands of one of your most talented playmakers. I don't really think Roethlisberger's in consideration here. I think a lot of people are kind of on Martavis Bryant returning after missing the 2016 season. You know, he had shown himself to be a huge downfield playmaker. You know, had 14 touchdowns in just 21 games so far in the NFL. After missing a whole season, though, who knows? But I could see him as an interesting alternative to Antonio Bryant in terms of, you know, Antonio Brown, rather, as Brown gets a little bit older here. He's only 6,500. I think he will have reasonable ownership for big tournaments. I'm not sure it's where I want to land once again, but definitely keep him in mind if you just want a guy in that $6,500 price range, which multiple touchdown upside.
Cleveland enters the season with DeShone Kizer as their starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And that could be something for him down the line. This is not going to be the year. And they've made a lot of offseason moves that strike me as a team that's probably starting to put it together, you know, just trading off some of their assets for draft picks and figuring stuff out. This is just not going to be this season.
Hey,
Isaiah Kroll. Again, he's another guy I could see having. I can see him having big games. The problem with Cleveland is going to be that they're just going to be consistently behind, and that again is just death for a starting running back. You just can't be a really good, consistent starting running back when your team's constantly losing because you just can't play in that kind of game script. So Kroll does catch some balls out of the backfield. I think there will be games where they can get up and kind of lean on him. This just doesn't strike me as that kind of game.
Yeah, he had 150 yards against Pittsburgh one game last year. You know, like, it's not out of the question, but given all your options in the whole world, Isaiah Kroll's who you're going to punch into that lineup
there's definitely a tournament option here where you can play Kroll and then play like some more of the Pittsburgh pass catchers, right? And kind of like say like the game script, just, you know, that 1 in 50 chance that it just kind of does go that way. And I think there is some upside, because like I said, Kroll, I like Kroll just overall as a running back. Again, when you're just 8-point underdogs, right, it's most times not going to work out. But hey, from a tournament perspective, the times where it does, it can really work out. And this actually strikes me as a nice game stack, because going the other way, if for some reason Pittsburgh's playing catch up again, it's really hard to imagine. But Kroll, that could be a situation that you can kind of get some separation. Kenny Britt takes the place of Terrell Pryor. Britt's shown some flashes himself in the past. I'm not sure the quarterback play is going to be good enough here. And then the rest of this team is pretty bad, and we're just going to move on. The last 1 o'clock game is Baltimore goes into Cincinnati. Another game that just strikes me as just potentially incredibly boring. Anything you like from this game at all?
Nothing jumps to mind right away. I mean, you know, two rather slow teams, two pretty good defenses, pretty low over-under at 42. Cincinnati, the slight favorite here. I think we still have concerns about Cincinnati running back by committee. Baltimore running situation has never really figured itself out, and Danny Woodhead's arrival doesn't make things any less complicated there. And then on the offensive side, or on the receiving side, there's just not a ton of big playmakers here. You know, you have AJ Green, but at 8,400 against Baltimore, come on. Like, that just feels terrible. Like, I could see him having almost like no ownership, even in big tournaments. Baltimore, that situation will be interesting as the season progresses. You know, they've got some new faces in there. Jeremy Maclin, you know, we have another season of Mike Wallace. There's things you can look at there, but Macklin's a guy who I could see being like a mid $7,000 wide receiver as the season progresses. But I feel like we've done this with Flacco before, where we've said, hey, he's never really had a good wide receiver core. But he kind of has, you know, like he had Mike Wallace. He's had guys come through there. And we saw what Macklin did in Kansas City. He was fine, but nothing out of this world. I don't know. Anything you're seeing that I'm missing out on? Because right now I'm just feeling kind of not.
I really want to like Macklin. He played hurt. According to him, he played hurt all last year, like with a groin tear or strain or something like that. He played hurt all last year. Like I said, I want to be able to talk myself into him. I'm just probably not going to. The team is just so, it's just a very boring team. There's just a lot of not very good mouths to feed is the way I kind of see Baltimore. And so I'm just like not that interested. I can see a situation where Cincinnati does like the Kareem Hunt kind of thing last night and just leans completely on Joe Mixon, and we just don't know that that's their plan, that they are just going to kind of be Mixon as their like run Mixon as a very much a feature back. And if that was the case, I think that you can probably grab a pretty nice price on him. You know, there's a bunch of candidates I see as clear candidates for big price jumps in come a week, you know, depending on what happens here. This is what always happens after week one, is that you're just going to get a bunch of situations where you just weren't completely sure what the team was going to do, and all these new faces and high leverage roles. Mixon strikes me as a guy that would I be shocked if we saw a pretty big dramatic price increase on him, because it just turned out that they just want to run him all the time. He fits that group. I just don't want to really go out on a limb and say it's going to happen week one. All right, let's head over to the 4 o'clock games. We hadn't mentioned before, but obviously the Tampa Bay and Miami game has been canceled because of the hurricane. The NFL news cycle moves so slowly when it comes to that kind of thing that's not really lost on anybody. Just kind of didn't mention it when we were rolling through the 1 o'clock games. But that one is off. They're going to make that up in like week 14 or 13 or something like that. So we'll head on over to the 4 p.m. game, starting with Indianapolis and the Rams. The Rams were -3 favorites going into LA, and then the luck news came out that he wasn't going to play in week one, and that line shifted something like 7 points to where it's now the Rams -4. We talked a lot about Todd Gurley on the Cash Game Plays podcast, where I do think that he, and nothing really has changed there. I'm still very much on Gurley going into this week, especially on DraftKings. Anything at all from the Indy side? I mean, they seem like a team. I mean, it's like Scott Tolles and Frank Gore. I'm actually surprised. If they were playing anyone but the Rams, I think here, this line would be a lot higher. I think that everyone's just kind of a little bit worried that the Rams are still not very good. Do you see anyone else that we kind of missed from this game besides Gurley?
No, not really. You look at the Scott Tolles and Jared Goff lineup and you think, you know what? This deserves to be one of the three or four games playing at 4 p.m. This is exactly what everyone's hoping to tune into and check out. I mean, what a mess. Like, I don't know that you can take just fully anyone on the Indianapolis side of the ball, right? Like, I mean, you can't play T.Y. Hilton at 8,000 with Scott Tolson as his quarterback, to say nothing of Dante Moncrief and the other guys. Like, maybe once Luck comes back, we can consider them. Yeah, the Rams don't really have anyone who plays a wide receiver position.
Well, they have Sammy Watkins.
Outside of Sammy Watkins, I was going to say, but he, I mean, what were his big accomplishments that he had in Buffalo before arriving here? Is Goff even an upgrade over Tyrod Taylor? Like, I don't know that you can affirmatively answer any of those questions. And if you can't, then he's just another guy. He's a guy with a big name who everyone thought was going to be good, who had some flashes of brilliance and kind of disappeared. Cordell Patterson, you know, these guys, they're a dime a dozen. Maybe Watkins turns into something special. I don't really see any reason for him to do so. So, yeah, I think it's Todd Gurley and then a long list of guys who won't be in my lineup.
We talked pretty extensively about the Seattle-Green Bay game in our last podcast because we covered guys like Jordy Nelson and Aaron Rodgers on the Green Bay side of the ball. We also talked about
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, we talked about Russell Wilson. So, again, go back and get our thoughts there. Those guys all are firmly in cash game considerations here. It'll be interesting to see the ownership on Wilson versus Rodgers. I prefer Rodgers. Our system does too, though it's not – it's closer than I kind of expected it would have been. Rodgers is much more consistent over the long term. That's why I prefer him there. What are your thoughts about Doug Baldwin? He's shown at times to be a pretty big target guy. He's shown himself to be actually an elite target guy at times. It hasn't completely run the entire course of a season, and he does not take games off, but there are games where he can kind of pull a disappearing act. Do you see him as a cash game safe? I do have to say, I do like a Russell Wilson Baldwin stack in this case, but do you think Baldwin trends up toward cash game consideration?
Yeah, they're a great pair to stack simply because Baldwin is just the feature guy when it gets down to the end zone for Seattle. Basically, any pass thrown from the 5 to 20 yard line seems to go Doug Baldwin's way for whatever reason. I think it's, you know, partly his own skills and being an excellent possession receiver, but also partly just Seattle's other options are pretty lousy. Like Tyler Lockett's not going to fill that role. Paul Richardson, Jimmy Graham, if healthy, I suppose, could have been that. He certainly was that for New Orleans, but really hasn't played out that way in Seattle so far. Baldwin, he's kind of weird because he's so consistent in terms of his yards and targets per game that his price winds up being pretty fair and actually winds up being pretty reliant on the touchdowns. If you think Seattle is going to get in the end zone a lot here, certainly if you like Russell Wilson, it's because you believe in Doug Baldwin. So it doesn't make sense to like one without the other, even though Wilson can be kind of a standalone guy. But overall, he's just kind of a guy. He might wind up being a little bit too expensive for me to pair with big name running backs for cash games, and might wind up having a little bit too little upside for me to want to play him in big tournaments. So he might just be on the outside looking
at. Yeah, no. I mean, for what it's worth, Jimmy Graham last year did have more red zone targets than Doug Baldwin. I think it was 19-16. So they split it maybe a little bit more than you think in the red zone between those two guys. I can actually see Graham. I've seen systems be a little higher on Graham than we are. Red zone usage for him strikes me as something that I'm interested in. He doesn't really do enough in the kind of the rest of the game, I think, to keep his floor high enough. But I'm interested in definitely stacking this game, especially if the game starts getting just pretty high scoring, which Vegas does see it as the case. Like I said before, this is the highest 51 over under is the highest on the entire slate. So there's a chance for a lot of points to be put up in this game. I really like, and like I said, we discussed it a ton on our last podcast. The 425 game is Carolina goes into San Francisco. Another guy we talked about was Cam Newton going in as a possible bounce back candidate here. He struggled a lot with some of his completion percentage last season, but there were some injury concerns as well. Carolina, they're basically the same team as last year, except they had Christian McCaffrey, but I think everyone's just kind of taking a wait and see, or I'm willing to take a wait and see approach on McCaffrey. Kelvin Benjamin's a guy though that, what are your thoughts on Kelvin Benjamin? Because he's a guy, he's had huge games. He's also come into camp out of shape. He's complete, pulled some complete disappearing acts. Like, he went from one game last year, he had like 12 or 13 targets, and then he had one target for zero catches and no yards. That kind of game log is super scary, but he's shown to have as much upside as just really anybody else in the wide receiver slot. What are your thoughts on Benjamin?
Yeah, I think Benjamin, I think maybe the upside for him is a little bit overstated. I think he's definitely had some big games, but not really in the same category as like the actual big name wide receivers. I think he's a guy that people have been projecting at his potential forever, and now he's 26 years old, but never really turned into a wide receiver one. Now, the good news is for DFS purposes, he's not priced like one either, right? Like, he's 6,500, so you can really get him on the cheap. But getting him on the cheap, for the volatility he provides, you know, I don't know. I could see him being a cash game viable player, especially with a clean bill of health. You know, the being out of shape concerns you. Being even a step slow at the wide receiver position can be pretty troubling. But yeah, I think he's just kind of like a guy to me. You know, not really someone I'm super excited about. San Francisco also kind of just an odd matchup for opposing offenses. They got absolutely destroyed by the run last season, being both the worst team against the run and the team that was run on the most because their offense is so bad. So we didn't really even get to see their pass game play a lot of credible downs. And they allowed, you know, they allowed the second fewest passing, or no, I'm sorry, I was looking at their offense. They had the second fewest passing yards. They were one of the, they appear to be a reasonable passing defense, but they, that's just because teams had no reason to pass against them. So, you know, I don't really like the Carolina running game, just a running back by committee. And I don't know how much I can trust the passing game, because if they get up, Carolina is certainly no stranger just pounding the ball on the ground when they are up. So Carolina, to me, feels very speculative and kind of
torn. Yeah, they, and again, they do upgrade the running back position in terms of depth. And McCaffrey, who's shown flashes during the preseason of probably just going to end up being pretty good. They still have Jonathan Stewart there. It is interesting to know Cam, just in terms of upside, Cam and Kelvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen were the only $1 billion, the perfect lineup that were had two pass catchers from the same team last year. So they at least threw one game, and it was against San Francisco, I think, in week two. So they've shown flashes of being able to just kind of really run up the score or just be able to put a lot of points on the board. But again, super volatile. That the completion percentage for Cam last season is definitely a worrisome number. So I definitely like them for tournaments, and I'll be probably hard-pressed to get anyone in there for cash games. The 8:30, the last Sunday game, is the 8:30 game against the Giants and Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott's suspension upheld, except for not for this week. So he'll play this week. I guess he's like still suing. There's some legal thing still going on there, where I suppose there's some...
Lucky Giants, by the way. Super
Well, yeah, totally rigged. This game... The Giants have a great defense, and I don't know why I'd want to get any real big Cowboys in here. The Giants might have like the number one ranked defense in the NFL going into this season. Do you think that that kind of pushes you off any of the Cowboys guys here? Vegas has this line. I mean, the Cowboys are favored by -4, but the implied total is not huge. How do you view some of the Cowboys first?
It's not low either. I mean, they're still a top 7 or 8 total in terms of the NFL for this week. Like, I mean, the Giants have a pretty good defense, but I think the Cowboys also have an excellent offense. You know, they were a top 5 offense in the NFL last season, and a lot of that was because of Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's a very reasonable pivot if you want to, like, especially for big tournaments. If you think, well, I do want a running back for whatever reason, but everyone's going to be on Bell and Johnson, he has just as much upside as those guys if everything comes together. And while the Giants are good, I don't think that they're the type of team that you just need to pack it in and just give up against. You know, they don't strike me as that 85 Bears sort of defense. They were basically middle of the pack in terms of yards per carry allowed. Oh, I'm sorry. No, they weren't. They were second.
I was going to say they were. No, they were.
But they were good. I mean, it's just that they're not the type of team where you can just write it off. And you know, I'm also buoyed by the fact that Vegas doesn't think so either. Given that Vegas thinks they can score points, you just have to try to figure out who will be scoring the points. Maybe it's just the public nature of the Cowboys, but the Giants are a pretty public team as well. So I think, you know, the big names you'd expect on the Cowboys all in play here for tournaments, Dez, Ezekiel Elliott, even Jason Witten, as he gets older, he's still very cheap. And, you know, we've seen Dak target him in the past. So yeah, all these guys are in play, if not super exciting. As for the Giants, I don't think we can touch their running game. Just a total question mark going into week one. They're cheap, so maybe you can get some upside there. But I don't really see why you're doing it. But I do have a question about the Giants passing game for you. So, you know, you have some familiar faces, mostly bad ones, but then you also have Brandon Marshall. What do you make of Marshall going into New York for this?
It's actually really not a situation. As a previous Giant fan, I really don't root for them anymore, just because doing this job is just too hard to keep rooting for someone. This doesn't have a situation. It's not a situation I pay a ton of attention to. Beckham is a little banged up, and I guess if you think that the ankle is going to be a real problem for him and they're going to need to go a different direction, that's interesting, because Marshall has shown he's shown the ability to be a high target guy. It probably hurts.
Well, he runs similar routes to Beckham too. Like, he can go downfield and he can catch balls in traffic. He was a top 20 target guy last season with the Jets with an awful quarterback situation, and much better situation here with Eli. I'm intrigued. I think he's an actual.
He could represent like the best wide receiver two that they've had there since Beckham has been there. It's only been a couple years now, but I'm still kind of taking a wait to see approach. I really don't want to target anyone in this game. I don't like the defenses are such on both sides of the ball that I don't think you need to do it, and it's just not a game that really interests me all that much. All right, we're going to get out of here. That covers all the main slate games for Sunday. Enjoy your week one, everybody. We'll talk to you again early next week.